Aue a wairea ki tēnei te pitu o ne tapu. Ka hura rā, ka takata, tai ki roto o takaroa ki te moana o te whanganui a tara. A kātou tēnei a hau ki tēnei te pitu o ne tapu, hei te tēro kei ruka i te taumata tapu teitei o mātairangi e tūwana e whakaruru hau mō tātou i tēnei rā. Hei whakaroko ki te tangi o te keo. E kōrero mai, e pōhiri mai, e mihi mai nei. Kia mātou nei, hei haro mai kei raro. Ko tēnei te wāhi noho o te aro, kei raro i te tau marumaru o taua mauka. Te kōrepe nui, te kōrepe roa. Te waimapihi awa, te kumutoto awa. Ko tū, ko roko, e putakāri ki no roko. Tūturu mai kia whakamaua, kia tīnā, tīnā, haumi e hui e, tae ki e, te honore tāku ki te tū, a ki te taha o enei rakatira, i te tuatahi hei poroporo aki kia rātou, o kai tua maha ko wehe ki tua o te ārai. Tu mea nui rātou kua mate nā te mate ārai kore. Nō reira, kia rātou, ki ēnei whakāhua o konei a Warren a wā. He tohu maumahara hoki ki kā wāhine kua mate. Nō reira, kia rātou. Hoki wairua mai, hoki wairua mai, hoki wairua mai ki rotu i tēnei tō tātou whare. Tuana mātou o ti whanawhana, hei mihi, hei maumahara, a hei tautoko tēnei tikaka e whai ake nei, nō reira tēnā tātou, tēnā tātou, tēnā tātou katoa. Kia ora, and good evening, and first and foremost, the reason for which we have come together is a memorial for those who have passed away due to HIV and AIDS over the many years. This annual memorial has been going for well over 40 years. This might be 42, 43, 44, I'm getting a bit old. I remember going to one in the little church in Addington in Christchurch in the first year they were run. It might have been 1984. And, sorry, just that's the prime reason. So the greeting this evening is to those who have passed away. Greetings to the people who have organised us and called us together, and greetings to you who have joined us in this memorial. And so we've acknowledged the place that we're in, the mountain that we sit under, the purpose for which we have come together. So kia ora tātou, lovely to be amongst you once again. Ooh.
kia makina kina kiuta, kia matara tara kita, ehi a te ana te atakura, e ti o, e uta, e hauru, ti e.
Te wairua, whakatau mai te henengaro, whakarite mai te tinana, kia e ai ngā mahi katua. Haumi e, hui e, tai e. Kia ora tātou, hei te
ka pai, thank you. So, but hello, my name is Debbie Roach, and I'm here tonight to thank everyone for being here for this evening for the Wellington Anne's Candlelight Memorial. So next I've got up was Dr. Hetty Rottenberg, sorry, she's come here to speak for her experience. She's been in the health, the AIDS and HIV sector for many years. So it's a very privilege, Hetty, to have you here tonight.
All right. I normally speak by heart, but because I get terribly excited at times, I brought a few notes to bring me back. So, tēnā koutou. Nā mihi nui mō te toro korero. This is, for me, very special to be invited here because it brought me back to many years. You know, in the 80s and 90s, I was working as a GP and had many, about 70 to 80 people, men and women, and even a young child, diagnosed with HIV/AIDS. And it was for me a privilege to serve them. And why I use that word, I want to talk today about a personal story, and then this word will make more sense. I was born before the war, and you probably hear my accent and my name. I come from Holland. And the war was not the most pleasant, of course, experiences, and one of them was my father, who was very high up in the Navy, and he was a judge. He was arrested by the Germans and put in a camp in Poland. And at the end of the war, on the 5th May 1945, that is our Liberation Day. And it's a very special day because for me it always has been the incredible joy. That's what I experienced as an 8-year-old, and later on, of course, it changed over the years. The Liberation Day was the joy of liberation and the gratitude for those who created that. And it was always combined with the grief for all those who had lost their lives, sometimes forced, you know, the Jewish people, the Gypsy people, the gay people, and many, many more, and a lot of people who lost their lives in the resistance. And there was a gratitude towards that. So there was a sense of balance in that for me, has always been. And my father came back after the liberation looking like a scarecrow because he was totally riddled with cancer. And to have cancer in post-war Holland was probably not such a good choice. There was no palliative care. There were not a lot of drugs. And he had cancer in his lungs as well as in his brain, the secondaries. So they started with taking a lung out, and they thought it was a great success because he was the first one in 6 people who survived. The 5 before died. So we also were very excited about that until the cancer in the brain became more obvious, and that didn't go so well. So he suffered. He really suffered. And he suffered on a physical level, and he suffered on an emotional level. You know, he was Dutch Reformed, very Christian. He had this God who he never complained to. I did. I talked a lot to that God and thought, why the hell don't you do anything? But that God was not listening to me very much. So I threw that God out of the window, of course, after my father died, because it was completely useless. But my father never complained, and he just suffered. And I was so desperate, because what could I do? And especially when he was emotionally suffering, because he had always had the dreams that he'd come back to his family, and he was going to be a judge. He was a judge, but he was going to be a mayor in a little village. So all that went. And all what I could be for him was be there and hold his hand and just be there. And I realized that that's just the being and holding his hands or sometimes striking his face, that created something in him. It settled him down. And it somewhere for me created a sense of peace at that time that I could still serve in a way. So my father died, and I know one of the last days that he was in the hospital rolling around in a bed that had high bars, otherwise he fell out. And I was 8, I was quite small because of the war, and I was so angry that I had my little hands around the bars, and I said, you know, God, you're pretty useless, but I am going to make a difference to people who are suffering, because that's not allowed. And you know, that is a spontaneous expression of an 8-year-old who at a certain time forgets that, but it's of course much deeper. It's really a message of the soul, what we come in with an incarnation. When we incarnate, we have a mission. And obviously my mission was to be of service to people who have far often life-threatening illnesses. And that's what I have been involved with AIDS and neurological illnesses and cancer and so on. And I made that promise. And remind me that at the end that I tell this story, how that came up again. But anyway, I always wanted to study medicine, so I studied medicine in Holland. Now, at that time, I'm an elder, so that was in the 60s. The education was slightly different than now. My granddaughter is studying medicine, and I can tell you that 80 to 90% of all the stuff that I put in my brain, books and books and books, is completely obsolete. The study now is so different, thank God, by the way. So I was 6 or 7 years, we were given knowledge. And there was a ratio behind that it was better not to get the heart involved. I was decapitated. Because they said, you know, if you get the heart involved, you get grief when somebody dies, and it might affect your practice. And if you become friends, even, you know, it's even worse. So be respectful, do the best you can, but stay in your head. And my heart was open because I was very passionate about life and animals and everything. But that part in the medical scene needed to be closed. It was emphasized. In the times that I did my, we call it in Holland, Kooschappe, you call it here internships, I think. And I had times that I was sitting on the bed with a patient holding their hand when they cried. I was later on told, better not. You know, just sit there and perhaps give them a handkerchief. So that's how I started. I worked in Holland. Then I worked in the States. I married a New Zealander. We lived in the States for a while. Then I came here in New Zealand and became an anaesthetist. Now, as an anaesthetist, you don't have a lot of communication. As you know, there are normally 2 questions, and they're always the same. Please don't wake me up during, and please wake me up after. Always the same questions, and I can tell you that I very dutifully always answered to those yes. And they thought I was absolutely wonderful, but there was just, I didn't know anything about that person. I knew that person was alive and the operation was a success. And that was so unsatisfactory for me that I went into general practice. And my general practice, my passion was really, although I had a big general practice, my passion was really to be with people with life-threatening illnesses. It was cancer and neurological illnesses, sometimes post-trauma, so, and worked very much in the hospice. And then the 80s came, and my first HIV patient arrived in the form of Gary McGrath. And there might be people here who knew Gary. Gary was the most amazing guy. He was, has been very influential in the needle exchange scheme. He did many, many, many things. I adored him, and he became my teacher. He became my teacher, and he became my friend. First of all, he told me a lot about what I absolutely didn't know, about IV drug use. He told me a lot about HIV. He told me a lot about what not to do. And I remember one day I saw my patients with cancer or HIV always in lunchtime because then I had more time for them. So Gary was there eating a sandwich and bringing me a sandwich as well, both had a sandwich. And then I was called out for an emergency next door. So I ran out, and when I came back 20 minutes later, he said, bad, bad. You do not leave an IV drug user in your room alone. He said, I know everything. He said, I know where you have the little key, and if I use that little key, I open that little drawer, and in that little drawer is this special prescription pad that you write your narcotics on, and there is still the imprint of your signature. So I can write anything. And I know as well where you keep your syringes. And I know a lot. He said, never, ever, ever do that. He said, you might love me, you might like me, but you put me in the waiting room when you go out. And he taught me a lot. And then through Gary and probably through the AIDS Foundation, I got more and more and more patients. And what I said, as a surgeon, there were about 70. And what I was faced with was with people, now let me start with myself. I knew a reasonable lot about HIV in my head. I went to conferences, I read a lot of books, I spoke with the hematologists and the research people, and I really tried to do the best I could. But that was not what it was about. What I met was people who were physically and emotionally suffering. I met people, what was new for me, to live in such fear in those days, with such stigma, with such despair, so abandoned, so ostracized, so not wanted, and that's the most important thing, not touched. You know, living in a society what was well-meaning, but ignorant. And ignorant creates fear. And fear creates separation. And why I used the word privileged in the beginning is that because through them, through those men and women who I had the blessing to care for, this opened. This had to open. It was always open in my normal life, but I had been so trained to, when you have a patient, you close it. And it opened. And I realized that when they were sitting there crying because somebody else had died, there were so many funerals we went to and eulogies I did, that I actually could hold them and give them a hug. Or that I hold their hand and just listened. And that was for me such a gift that I realized that I had the capacity to be there with an open heart without the fear, because you're very vulnerable, because you get hurt. I did get hurt. I did cry. I did felt awful. I did feel angry when things happened. But I kept my heart open. And I'm so incredibly grateful for that. Because what they went through, and then at the same time they held it sometimes in a resilience and a courage that was just amazing. I remember a very beloved friend of mine, HIV person, who came in, and he came in, he said, he had the key of the door in his hand. He said, "This is all what I have left, Hetty. So-and-so has died as well." What was, I think, his sixth or seventh friend who had died. And he said, "There is an empty house." But it was a metaphor. It was an empty heart. It was filled with grief. There was no love left. You know, and you, when you can be of assistance, and assistance is not such a mental world, you know, when you can be of service, I love the word service, when you can be of service to somebody like that and just hold them, that's worth 7 years of study. Because that's what life is about. Life is not about doing, you know, writing lots of prescriptions and knowing a lot. Life is about your heart, but needs to be wide open. And so this brings me to the next thing, because we, these people, and it was so beautiful how somebody opened here this morning, let's never forget their legacy. Because their legacy, together with the scientists and with the hematologists, they created here in New Zealand now a time where somebody with HIV is a chronic illness as long as they take medication. What a blessing. And it's not outside New Zealand, because, as you know, in many countries it's rampant. But here, because of their suffering. Because when AZT came out, everybody was terribly excited. And I tell you that there were quite a few of my patients who died of the side effects of AZT, because they had no idea how to prescribe it. How much and how many and what the side effect was and what it could combine with, you know. And it was these little things. I there's so many stories I can tell you. I have, one of them came in the morning to me. He had advanced AIDS. He didn't have a long time to live. And he said to me, "Now they've taken my coffee away." And I said to him, "What do you mean?" He had been to a very well-willing hematologist, because all of them tried. But he had a habit. He went in the morning when he got up, he went to a cafe and had a coffee and two cigarettes. And then he went through his day, what was mainly taking hundreds of medication and being very sick. And then around 4 or 5 o'clock, he had another coffee with two cigarettes. That was two rituals that kept him going. And they had said to him that it was better not to do that. So I told him, of course, to smoke two cigarettes and have 4 cups of coffee, because that is what love is about. You know, I am so into rituals, the healing power of rituals, the healing power of the open heart. And so let's not forget, and what they have given as a legacy as well is something that we can use now, because we live now in a world here in the world in general, but in New Zealand as well, where there is corruption, there is separation, there is poverty, there is judgment, it is a separation between the haves and the have-nots. And it's going to get better, and a lot of judgment to anybody who dares to be different. Dangerous. Never close your heart. Our strengths, how we will survive and how we will overcome, is in communities. In a community like we have here, in a community perhaps at work, perhaps a community I live in an apartment building, so an apartment, a community with sports, have a community where you love. And I don't mean the love from, oh my God, we found each other and we run to the horizon and we live for 50 years, ever after. I don't believe in that at all. I believe in the love, what is about joy, what is about courage, what is about generosity, what is about compassion, what is especially about acceptance, what is different. Accept each other in our gender, in our culture, in our color, in our language, in our choice of sexuality, accept each other. That is love. And you know, love is the universal healer. And that is, for me, that is something what is, I've always probably had it, there was always a seed inside me, but through those years, 15, 16 years with so 75 or 80 people with HIV, that has got us through. That has got us through together. It got through me. I could be sad. I could cry. But it never got me down because there was still the love. If you have love, people cannot take that away from you. So it is so important for me. And so I want to, I just suddenly, there's a little voice that says, tell the story. And I tell that story of that little kid that stood there with her little claws almost in the war around that bed of my father and said, and you get out of the window. I spoke to God. And I am going to make a difference to people with cancer or people are suffering. And in, it was about 94, 95, I did a lot of debriefing in the Hart Hospital with people from A&E or with the orderlies. If you want to do some debriefing, do it with the orderlies. So we did that and I said, it was a group of nurses who worked in plastics or A&E, I can't remember. And they talk, you know, it's very important for them to talk out the trauma. And this time I said, to introduce them, I said, now don't tell your name. I said, I want you to know why you became a nurse. And don't think you wanted to marry the doctor or you like the uniform. I said, just go, close your eyes, go inside and ask that question and it will come. Until their surprise, answers came that they never had realized. And they were very excited about it. And I wanted to start the course. And they said, no, you, Hattie. And it was very spontaneous. And I closed my eyes and I became 8. And I was standing like this and say, I am going to make a difference to people with cancer. And I think I have served my soul in that way because it has been my purpose in life. It's never been work. And I swear that I'm not bad, please, I'm not. I have every day of my work, what was 25 years and then longer after I sold my practice because I went on other ways and I'm still counseling. Every day I have enjoyed. And when you know that you have that you bring a tiny little bit difference, it helps. So that is really my message, you know, stay in your heart. Don't close it. Don't be afraid. Heart is the universal healer, the healer of fear, the healer of judgments, the healer of separation. Fear separates, love connects. And that's where our strength is. So, aroha atu, aroha mei. Tena koto katoa. Thank you.
Thank you, Hiti. Thank you so much. Right, now we're going to have a positive speaker, Matt Sharp.
Kia ora koutou. Ko Matt Sharp, toko ingoa. I just resonated with some of the words that Hetty said, which was, let's not forget. So I encourage everybody to say, let's not forget. Kia ora. So tonight, I want to speak about the importance of community, about how community come together in times of need, and how we support one another to share memories and reflect. Events like tonight's International AIDS Candlelight Memorial are a very important part of that. This is probably about the fourth memorial I've attended. I've helped organise one, and every time I find it deeply moving. It's a moment where we remember how many lives lost to AIDS, but also the struggles faced by people who have been living with HIV since the beginning of the epidemic in the early 1980s. It's also a reminder of the strength of our communities. In a couple of months, in July, Aotearoa will mark the 40th anniversary of the Homosexual Law Reform Act, which decriminalised consensual relationships between men in 1986. And that was another time when communities came together to fight for equality, dignity and human rights. People stood up, often at great personal cost, to create a safer future for others. Here in Wellington, local figures such as Bill Logan and Fran Walsh helped lead that charge. For me personally, community became especially important in 2013, the year I was diagnosed in HIV while living in Berlin. At that time, I made the decision to come home to Aotearoa to be closer with friends and family. But even surrounded by people who loved and supported me, I still felt isolated within my experience of being HIV positive. I realised I needed connection with people who truly understood what I was going through. I reached out to the Burnett Foundation, which at the time was the New Zealand AIDS Foundation, through their Fina Centre. I was able to access counselling, and that became the beginning of my healing journey. Not long after that, I nervously attended a monthly peer support group. It was the first time I had really sat in a room with other people living with HIV. I was able to share my own experiences, my story, and listen to others share theirs. For the first time since my diagnosis, I truly felt that I was not alone. Later, another meetup group was formed through Body Positive. We met monthly at S&M's, generally hosted by the legendary Scotty and Mal. We would catch up over drink, talk about life, discuss developments in HIV treatment and advocacy, and then we'd head out for a meal together afterwards. Something as simple as a regular monthly catch-up became incredibly important. It created consistency, connection, and belonging. There was a core group who came regularly, but also there were people who dip in and out depending on where they are on their journey. That is the strength of the community too. People can come as they are when they need it. After a year or so, I took on the role of coordinating the group myself. It became a real privilege to help hold space for others in the community, provide peer support where needed, and help organise events such as Candlelight Memorial, World AIDS Day Parliamentary Breakfast, and Project the Toi Toi Exhibition. Earlier last year, I stepped away from coordinating the group, but is now in very good hands with Debbie. I still attend monthly meetups because staying connected to the community remains important to me. Seeing familiar faces from that meetup group here tonight means a great deal. It's also a reminder of the connections we build through community and the importance of continuing to show up for one another. Even after many years, there is still something powerful about being in a room where people understand each other's experiences without needing everything explained. Another community I'm proud to be part of is the Positive Speakers Bureau, New Zealand's preferred supplier of HIV education services. PSB empowers people living with HIV to share their stories, helping raise awareness, improve understanding of HIV through the country, through storytelling. For me, being part of PSB has also been another step in turning personal experience into connection, education and advocacy. When I look back now, I don't like to think about where I would be without community. The community helped me, it supported me and reminded me I was not alone. And in turn, I hope I've been able to do the same for community. So, tēnā koutou katoa, and one more time, let us not forget. Kia ora.
So tonight we come together in remembrance and reflection and solidarity. We gather to honour those we have lost HIV and AIDS, to acknowledge those living with HIV today, to recognise families, friends, carers, advocates and communities. We continue to work alongside together. The AIDS Candlelight Memorial has always been about more than remembrance. It's also about visibility, compassion, education and hope.
It reminds us of the importance of communities, especially during times when fear, stigma and silence isolated so many of us. For many of our communities, HIV epidemic is deeply personal. We remember partners, friends, whānau, colleagues and community members who lives we're cut short far too soon. We remember the courage of those who face discrimination and hardship with dignity and strength. And we honour the activists, health workers, volunteers and organisations who fought tirelessly for care, treatment, equality and understanding. While so much progress has been made, tonight we remind us that work is not over. HIV stigma still exists, access to healthcare and support is not equal for everyone, and there is still people who feel isolated and afraid. So tonight, as we light candles and share the space together, may we recommit ourselves to kindness, inclusion and care for one another. I would like to sincerely thank everyone who helped make tonight possible, our volunteers, speakers, performers, supporters and community organisations. Your support means a great deal. Most importantly, thank you to all you for being here. Your presence matters. It shows that those who remembered are not forgotten and that the community continues to stand together with compassion and hope. As we move into the candle lighting portion of this evening, I invite you to take a quiet moment to reflect the people we carry with tonight. And then, so if you take a moment, and then feel free, please come up and light a candle for those, for us to remember. We prepare to blow out the candles, to step back home. I want to thank each of you for being here. In doing so, we continue to long-standing tradition of standing in solidarity, remembering those we have lost and reaffirming our support for people living with HIV today. Over the years, our Wellington community supporter groups, we were very thankful to Burnett Foundation, Body Positive and Positive Woman. For these organisations, they have stood strong against stigma, misinformation and isolation. And luckily we wouldn't be here without them today, without their support. Tonight reminds us that while medical advancements and modern treatments have transformed HIV into a condition people can live with, our work is not done. We must keep educating the next generation, maintaining the visibility of New Zealand AIDS Memorial Quilt, which we have down one of them here, and fighting prejudice in our neighbourhoods. Thank you for your time, your araha, and ongoing commitment to building a compassionate Aotearoa. And next up, can we please have our closing with Te Whanawhana? Thank you.
Tēnā anō tātou. Ka nui te mihi ki a koutou, kua kōrero tia. Greetings and acknowledgements to you who have spoken this evening and have brought forth and shared thoughts and feelings with us that resonate for all of us here, I'm sure. And so we come to the closing part. We might keep the candles burning until after we've done the final karakia, and then we can finish them informally rather than having a... Yep, we'll be doing that. That's the one. That's the one. But for the meantime, there's a formality of poroaki, which is a farewell. And so from our way of seeing the world, because we've remembered people and brought them forth, then they're actually present. And so this part of the ceremony, the final closing, is to greet them, greet those that have come in response to that memory, and to farewell them back to the places where they currently reside, which is, we would say, beyond the veil, on the other side of that unknown place where we can philosophise about what it is, but it's not here. Many, many different worldviews. But for us, we have brought them in to offer memories, and by lighting candles and by thinking and speaking names, then we carry out that action. So this is the response to that. So we can then move into the social element of our gathering, the community support element of our gathering that we've been talking about. Anō reira, huri nō ki a koutou. O kaitua maha kua whakahoki mai, kua hoki wairua mai i rotu i tēnei tō tātou whare. Ka heke tonu ka roimata mō koutou. So we're acknowledging you who have returned to us in spirit this evening. And we're reminding you that tears are still falling for you. Ka maumahara tonu mātou. Kia koutou, and we still remember you. Nō reira, kia koutou. Kua tai mai te wā, hei hoki atu ki tua o te arai. And so now, at this time, the time has arrived for you to return beyond the veil. Hei noho kei reira, hi te aroaro o ka tipuna o kātua. And so to dwell there once more in the company of your ancestors and of the spirits with whom you now reside. Anō reira, hoki atu rā, hoki atu rā, hoki atu rā. We farewell you, we farewell you, we farewell you. Noho kei reira, i tēnei rā, i tēnei pō, i te aroha, me te raki mārie. Dwell there this day and this night in peace and love. Rātou kia rātou kā mui, tātou kia tātou e tōnei, tēnā koutou. And so we leave our departed spirits to themselves, and we greet us now, those of us who still live in Te Ao Marama within the world of life. Greetings to you all. Ka manaaki taka ki ruka. May blessings descend upon us as we conclude our gathering. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou. So this waiata here talks, again, it's another love song, another waiata aloha. And it talks about those our love for those who have gone beyond. And so the Nunu, the Mupuk, comes and reminds us of them and of our aroha for them. But we're standing here very much alive and in our humanity when they have gone in spirit. Nō reira, tēnā koutou. Tēnā koutou, huri noa, huri noa, tēnā tātou katoa.
Tērā pua nāi te ara tika mātua. Kāmiā te uru, kei te hoki, hoki mai. Te whaka pero pero i te pūtahi tāna. Nātu nei a koe, he tuku ngā hare. Te rāpiti a iho, nui rawa tāro hae. Te hoki ngā mai, te Nga te naku ki te aroha Tūtoni rā te manga te hihi o ngā tipuna Kua wehe atu rā Mauria mai
te poho o tāne nui araki. Tauturu mai kia whakamaua kia tīnā.
Tīnā!
Haumi e, wī e.